Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Another fascinating thing going on in our region and, yes, in the Berkshires. Not only the great exhibits that we just talked about at the Norman Rockwell Museum, but the opportunity for this six-part course that is coming up at OLLI, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Berkshire Community College. It is an event that takes place to commemorate the Scopes Monkey trial and the 100th anniversary. In July 2025, Clarence Darrow, William Jennings Bryan, and a supporting cast of fascinating characters converged to bond Dayton, Tennessee for what became known as the Scopes Monkey trial. Religion, science, education, free speech, textbooks, all were at issue for 8 days of an epic battle that was broadcast on radio to the nation. The trial later was popularized in Inherit the Win, but the real trial was even more interesting. The Scopes Monkey trial 100 years later, what happened then and why should we care now, is a six-part course from Doug Mishkin starting April 1st at OLLI. Doug Mishkin is a frequent OLLI teacher, speaker, and interviewer. He has taught the songs of Woody Guthrie, of Woody's children, Pete Seeger, and beyond, and the values of Aaron Sorkin. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Doug Mishkin to the Roundtable. Thank you very much. Welcome back.
Good to be with you.
Thank you. All right. How did you come to this? Was it the realization that the anniversary was coming?
Well, when I was a kid, I fell in love with Inherit the Wind.
Yeah.
And I was probably 11 years old, and I watched the movie umpteen times, and I thought, you know, I have a feeling I'm going to law school when I grow up, but it's sad because they've already tried the most interesting case ever. Little did I know that 100 years later, we'd still be fighting the same case. So in 2019, I decided to teach a course for OLLI about the trial, and realized that although most people think they know about the trial from Inherit the Wind, the real trial was so much more interesting. So I taught it, and I thought that'd be that. But when I realized that this July is the 100th anniversary, I thought, I can't let that go by. So I'm teaching it again.
That's great. What was your reaction to how it went the first time?
Well, how it went the first time, of course, is a complicated story. Tennessee had passed a statute in 1925 saying you can't teach evolution in school. The ACLU was a fledgling organization. It decided to try and find a test case. It published an ad in the Tennessee papers, and an enterprising businessman in Dayton, Tennessee, named George Rapelier, said, you know, if we can find somebody who says they taught evolution, we could probably get the attention of the world. We could get a lot of people to come to Dayton. We could sell a lot of hotel rooms and a lot of hot dogs. And that's basically what happened. Those of us who think that religion and science ought to be kept separate, well, in our view, we lost. And if you share my view of the world on those issues, we're still losing all too frequently.
So give us a sense of the of how you're teaching the course and what exactly will be going on.
So the first class is all about how the case came to be in Dayton, Tennessee. And it tells the story of this businessman and how he and other town leaders brought the trial there. And then how William Jennings Bryan got involved. And based on that, how Clarence Darrow offered his services and volunteered to do so for no fee and no expenses. It was the only time Darrow did that. Then we do a deep dive into the trial. We go into the trial transcript for three classes worth, because there are umpteen stories woven into the trial itself. Some of them are of historic significance, and some of them are just plain fun. Then we'll do an entire class on Inherit the Wind. How did it come to be written, produced? How did it become the phenomenon that it is? And then the last class is really all about what does it mean for us today.
We also welcome to the program Professor Edward Larson, author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book Summer for the Gods, The Scopes Trial, and America's Continuing Debate Over Science and Religion, who I understand will be part of your course, will be zooming in.
Well, Ed's book a Pulitzer Prize winner, and deservedly so, is very much a part of the course. After the course is over, I will be interviewing Ed on Monday night, May 12th at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, to give members of OLLI an opportunity to hear from him directly.
Ed, welcome to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you.
Thank you. It's always great to be speaking back in the Berkshires. Just wanted to say I was glad to be back speaking in the Berkshires because I went to school at Williams College, and I was hoping that spring has finally arrived there.
Yeah, it hasn't, but that's fine. I'm sure by the time you zoom in, it'll be it'll be a little bit better. So, summer for the gods. What brought you to this subject initially?
Oh, I'm a historian of science, and I'm also a law professor and have a law degree. And it was a subject I knew that it combined my expertise. And I knew that no historian had ever written a book about the Scopes Trial. Here it was a American legend, a trial people know. And when you think about it, there are not too many trials that are 100 years old that everybody's that people know. They know about court cases. They know about Dred Scott or something like that. But they don't know about trials. But this trial has lived on and become a legend. And nobody, no historian had tackled it, written by some journalist. But as your other guest knows, you don't write very good history by solely relying on newspaper reports. And so nobody had gone back in. And I knew there was a raft of primary source material. I knew all the people involved with the trial, Brian Darrow, but all the rest, even the local people, were had saved everything about the trial, all the communication. And so like a historian sleuth, I went through it all. I went up, and there were still some survivors left who'd seen the trial back then when I wrote my book. They're not gone now, but interviewed them, just did a classic historical work. And I unpacked an American legend.
In that American legend, obviously, the 100th anniversary, but this is still something that is so relevant and still guides us. And I'm wondering what you think the opportunity is when you have an anniversary like this of what we can take away from it.
I think that part, like any legend, it survives because it's a ripping good story involving larger-than-life characters that we can relate to. We can relate to people like Brian and Darrow and Scopes, even Rapelier, who was mentioned by Doug. Doug did a spot-on description of events. So I agree with everything Doug said. So it's a great story. And it's also one, like any good legend, that is readily usable by all sides. And always has been readily usable by all sides. This is a case involving a lot of characters. Brian Darrow, the ACLU, the people of Dayton, the promoters of the PR stunt in Dayton, the trial, every stakeholder won, and that's one of the they all advance their cause, and to this day, everybody, every side uses the Scopes trial to their own advantage.
Doug, same question to you.
Well,
yeah,
Joe, another reason that this this legend lives on is when you think of the issues that were being litigated, and you read off descriptions of them at the top of this segment, is religion and science, religion in the schools, school curricula, textbooks. It's as if these were ripped from the headlines of today. We are still fighting over these issues. Who gets to decide? Is it a matter of majority rule? What about minority rights? We're still struggling with these issues today.
When you look at these issues, what do you see? How do you see them manifesting themselves in our current time?
Well, I think we see them now every day. When I first taught my course in 2019, I finished by telling the story of wildfires in the Midwest that had been the subject of a terrific New Yorker article, and hundreds of square miles destroyed. And when people were asked about climate change, they said, well, God will protect us. And my comment in response was, talk about inherit the wind. And 6 years later, in the view of some of us, what we now have are science deniers running the Department of Health and Human Services. This all comes from the same issues that were being fought about 100 years ago. We're still fighting them.
And your thoughts on that, Ed?
As I say, every side won in this trial. Brian won. He became a bigger name. He was lionized by his people. His cause, as Doug suggests, his cause won. Creationism is bigger than it ever was. Anti-evolutionism is bigger than it ever was. His side won. But same way with Darrow. Darrow was pretty much sort of on the outs after Leopold Loeb trial, and this made him a hero. He became a hero of the left. He became a hero of, and then it went on to the Sweet trial the year after on desegregation and where people can, where African Americans can live in Detroit, and he becomes becomes a hero of that side where he hadn't been. The town won. My gosh, the town ran it as a publicity stunt, just as Doug said, and it's still working for the town. The town drew thousands of people to Dayton, the biggest show of the summer, and from that they got a college, Bryan College, which has grown over the years, but they're still attracting people. Every year they get thousands of people come to the Scopes Trial Museum, and they get this summer they're going to get even more than that. They put on a festival, a Scopes Trial Festival in the summer. This has been a PR stunt that keeps living. I'd call it the most successful PR stunt of the 1920s, and that was a celebrity-loving era. So this was an event that became an object lesson or an example of how partisanship, how works, how you can use celebrity and veer off to that and make an issue even bigger and promote your own side. So this has been this is a great lesson, I believe, in modern politics, in modern culture. Development in the nice thing about it, probably why it works, is that every side and everyone can claim to be a victim, and people love to be victims.
Mm. Joe, there's a whole world of fun facts that go along with the trial, and I think one that your listeners ought to know about is there is, shall we say, very serious doubt that John Scopes actually ever taught evolution. And Ed goes into that in detail quite nicely in his book. John Scopes himself talked about it in his own memoir. But this was, we would call, a collusive lawsuit. Namely, the ACLU wanted to bring a test case. They needed somebody who would say, yes, I taught evolution, and it's noteworthy John Scopes never took the witness stand because Darrow and the other lawyers knew they couldn't put him in a position of having to perjure himself and say he did it when he probably didn't.
So where are we? And I mean, as 100 years later, and we're, the news today is that the Health and Human Services Department has let go 10,000 full-time employees and scientists within the department. We can extrapolate from that the science aspect is not felt to be important.
Well, if you're asking if I have a view about this, of course I do. Ed says everybody can claim victory here. If your view of the world is like mine, where religion and science ought to be treated as two different things, when they're confused, each is disserved. But I think it goes even beyond the science issues. And I want to, before we leave, I want to share with our listeners a piece that I found written back in 1925 in the immediate aftermath of the trial, because it's about science, and at least one commentator at the time said it's going to be about race as well, which so much of our history turns out to be about. A guy named William Pickens was on the original staff, or the early staff, of the NAACP, and he published a piece in the magazine of the NAACP called The Crisis. It's too long to read the whole thing, but the point of it is, he says, look, the world may be laughing at Dayton, Tennessee right now, but this is no joke. And then he said, the folk who leave white Tennessee in blank and ridiculous ignorance of what science has taught the world since 1859 are the same ones who would leave black Tennessee and black America with just as little education as is consistent with fairly efficient labor and reasonable contentment. These are folk who rave over the 18th Amendment, prohibition, and are dumb over the 15th, giving voting rights to blacks. In the end, he said, Dayton, Tennessee is no laughing matter. It is menace and warning. It is a challenge to religion, science, and democracy. He wrote that 100 years ago.
Ed, anything you'd like to add to that? And no, as a fine answer.
I think it's a again, I think it's a great story. I encourage your people to take Doug's class. It will be a great opportunity to explore these issues.
And by the time we get to my interview of Ed Larson on May 12th, he will have an audience of the best informed people possible, having spent 6 weeks digging into the trial.
Absolutely. It's the Scopes Monkey Trial 100 years later. What happened then and why we should care now? It is a 6-part course from Doug Mishkin, starting April 1st at Ollie, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Berkshire Community College. You can find out more by going to berkshireollie.org. berkshireollie.org. We also want to thank Edward Larson, author of Summer for the Gods, The Scopes Trial, and America's Continuing Debate Over Science and Religion. Thank you very much, Ed. It was a great pleasure to have you on the program. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I look forward to my next trip to the Berkshires. I was there last summer. I'll come back again this summer.
Thank you very much. Also, thanks to Doug. I appreciate have a great course.
Thank you.
Be well. Again, you can find out more by going to berkshireollie.org, berkshireollie.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.